desire y'all's prayers this morning. Have a little burden that the Lord has given me that I hope I'll be able to deliver. So what I wrote on the board was our appointed time. What is an appointed time? We all know the verses over there in Hebrews chapter 9, verses 27 and 28. And as is it appointed unto man once to die, but after this the judgment, so Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. So what does it mean to have an appointed time? I mean, that verse was talking about the appointment we have to face death and then the judgment. But starting to think just a little more literally, if you have an appointment, what does that signify? What does an appointment signify? If you make an appointment to go get your tires changed, what's going to happen? Well, there's actually quite a few things involved in an appointment beyond just a date or time. So the word appointment, one of the things I want us to look at is the word of appointment actually generally is constituted of four things. You have an agreement. There's been a discussion generally. You've talked with the people. You've come up to an agreement. That agreement includes what I'm going to call an assignment of position or a location. You know, if I'm going to make an appointment to have my tires changed, do you know you can actually call people up and try to get them to drive out to your house to change a tire? You'll pay a little more, but there are people that do that if you want to try to make that kind of appointment. Otherwise, you're liable to be told, well, we don't do that at this shop. If you want your tires changed, you're going to have to come get your car up here. There's also an assignment of responsibility as part of an appointment. If you made an appointment to get your tires changed and you drove up to the tire shop and the mechanic said, all right, glad you're here. The tools are right there. The new tires are in that rack. Do you need me to show you how to use the machinery real quick so you can get to changing your tires? What would you think? I know what I would think is like, wait a minute. I made the appointment so that you could change the tires. My responsibility was to get the car here at the set time. Your responsibility is to change the tires for me. That's the appointment we've made, we've agreed upon. And then part of that appointment includes being equipped. So what would happen if I had somebody pick me up and drive me up to the tire shop and drop me off, but I didn't bring my car? How much good would that do towards me meeting that appointment to get my tires changed? You think the mechanic might look at me a little odd? So you had your neighbor drive you up here. You left your car at home. You know, part of the appointment is that we have to be equipped for whatever it is. Have you ever had an appointment with a bank or with somebody around doing mortgage paperwork or loan paperwork? And the documentation they often want you to bring, you know, proof of residence, proof of employment, things like that. Show up without the stuff you need and what happens? They'll usually look at you and say, well, we're going to have to reschedule. You weren't prepared. So have we ever thought about the spiritual side of things, of appointments in those terms? That there's appointments. That it's agreement to something where we may be assigned a position or a location, be given responsibility for completing something in that position or location, and also being given what we need to complete that. So let's go back to kind of thinking about Hebrews there, appointed time. So it's appointed unto man to face death and after that the judgment. Do you think that appointment for death is at a set date and time? That God has a big old calendar out there somewhere and there's an absolute end. He's got a little sticker, with, if you will, with your name on it, stuck on that calendar. And no matter what, at that date and time, you're going to pass. Do you think that's the way God has for our appointed time? If we look at Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, this is when the, if you want to call it the appointment with death, was given out. It says, "In the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat bread, till thou shalt return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return." Do you realize that's just a general appointment with all humanity to face death? And if we consider that, do you think your death date is flexible? That it may be dependent upon how you act? Have y'all ever considered that? Your appointment with death is the date is something you actually help choose? What's the first commandment with promise? Anybody remember that one? Exodus 20 and 12. "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." Right here we see that God has said, you know what? I'm willing to work with you. I'm willing to give you and make an agreement with you on how things can go. You want to live longer? You want to push that appointment out? There's a way to do it. Could it be that our choices, good or bad, will actually move our date of death up or out? In Psalms 119, 109, David says, "My soul is continually in my hand, yet do I not forget thy law." Have you ever really considered about what our actions do to us and for us in the eyes of God? How they shorten our lives, they change the path we're on. Uzzah, y'all may not notice that name. It's in the Bible. It is a story we all probably know, but you probably never thought about the man's name. Uzzah, he was a man driving a cart, pulled by oxen, with the ark in the back. The oxen stumbled. The ark looked like it was going to tip over. Uzzah reached back and did what was something you were commanded not to do unless you were the priesthood. He touched the ark. And as such, he died. Was that just his time to go? Did God just say, you know what? On that date, I'm going to cause the oxen to stumble and no matter what that... Or do you think that was actually a result of his choice going contrary to what God had commanded? The city of Nineveh. We all hear the story of Jonah. And in the city of Nineveh, it's almost in some ways when we look at the story of Jonah, it's a side thing. It's where Jonah refused to go. But we really don't think about the fact that the city of Nineveh, Jonah went in there preaching that in 40 days that town was going to be destroyed. That God had appointed them for destruction. What did the city do? Did they just laugh at Jonah? And say, whatever. You're not the first person that told this big old city that we're going to be destroyed. So we're good. Just preach your way on out of town and we'll see what happens in 40 days. No. It says the people brought the news to the king, and the king turned around and declared a fast for the entire city, for people and animals. You weren't even supposed to feed your animals during this time. Why? If God had appointed you to die in 40 days, why do that? Because God really didn't want to kill him in 40 days. He had appointed that to them if they didn't change. But he was willing to say, if you will turn to me, forsake your evil ways, I'll change the appointment. I'll modify it. We have Hezekiah. Hezekiah was also given an appointment, wasn't he? The prophet showed up and said, you're going to die. Prepare yourself. Put your house in order. Hezekiah turned to the wall, cried unto the Lord, said, Lord, you've seen everything I've done. I've tried to walk before you in uprightness. So the Lord said, okay, I've heard. Told the prophet before the prophet made it out, I think it was the second court, told him, go back in. Tell Hezekiah, I've heard. I'm going to change that. Why do you think God negotiates appointments with us, if you will? When God said something, but then he says, okay, wait a minute, I've heard you. I will actually work with you on that. Why do you think he does that? Has the terms mercy and grace ever entered your head at that point? That God is sitting there saying, you know what, if I take them at this time, I know where they will go. And I don't want them to go there. Have you ever thought God is a loving God that doesn't want anyone to go to hell? It says so in the Word. He doesn't want anyone to perish. So while he will set you a time and a place that you will eventually face death at, that's something he's willing to work with you on and say, wait a minute, you want to turn to me? We can get you to where I want you so that when you face death, it's not the death of a sinner. But let's also look at appointments just a bit. So back to kind of like the analogy of the car. You know, appointments can be a couple of different kinds. You can have appointments to duty, appointments to do something. And then sometimes you have appointments of judgment. We all go into school, you know, when you were in class, you had a duty to learn, right? And then what happened every so often in class? You had a date to take a test, didn't you? Almost felt like a date of judgment sometimes, didn't it? Where it was maybe a subject you hadn't prepared for adequately, or maybe one you just struggled with. And suddenly you're sitting there, and oh boy, I don't know if I can pass. Do you know we will face appointments of both kinds? God gives us appointments of duty. In your life, have you been looking for those? To say, Lord, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing now? You know, sometimes it's just to be quiet, to sit peaceful, take a rest. Other times it's to be up and about doing things. But you know, if you don't do the duty, what was it that it said there in Hebrews? You'll face death, and after that, what? The judgment. God's covenant, the Bible, is an agreement. Now, people might think, but I never agreed to this. Maybe you didn't get to sit down and negotiate the terms. But how many of us has used software on a computer in our lives today? And it comes with a license agreement. And what happens when you use that software? You agree to it. It's just what it is. You don't really have a choice in the terms. You do have a choice in whether you're going to follow them or not. And if you follow them, you're good. If you don't follow them, and especially if you're a business, and the business decides to audit you, which they can do you know you can be found guilty of copyright infringement, and it can be up to $100,000 per instance? I was working at a company one time. They had not been doing a good job at tracking the software that was installed on the company's computers. And they decided to go ahead and do a self-audit. There would have been close to $1 million worth of fines if we'd have been audited by the actual company. Because people were just lax. So you buy a piece of software, and you've got maybe two computers at the house, maybe a desktop and a laptop. Do you install it on both? Do you know you need to better go read the agreement you have with that software before you do that? Because some software will pretty much tell you can install it on maybe five computers at the same time. No big deal. Other software will say you can install it on as many computers as you want as long as you only use one copy at a time. And then there's other programs, they will tell you straight up, you can't install this anywhere but one computer. And you do anything else with it, you're out of violation with the terms. And those are the terms. You can't negotiate those. You have to abide within them. We have the agreement that God's given us for life. God said, here's the terms for life. You may think you can reject the terms. And you can. You can't reject the consequences of the terms, though. Just like I can tell the software developer, I'm going to install it on as many computers as I like, even though you say I should only install it on one. Because I disagree with your agreement. Software developer will simply say, okay, let me know when you're done. Send me the list of computers you've got it installed on, and then I'm taking you to court, and you're going to pay me anyway. Because you can't change the agreement. With God, do you know you can't argue, modify, change the agreement as much as people want to? There's people in this world that will tell you, you know, all you have to do, cry out to the Lord, cry out to Jesus, accept Him as your Savior, and what? You're in heaven. You can never fall away. Nothing will ever go wrong as far as, you know, you getting into heaven. Once you're saved, you're good. That's it. Matthew 7, 21 through 23 says, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works. And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Now think about what those verses just said. You can actually have cried out to Jesus, prophesied, done good works, and yet Jesus says, I don't know you. Why would Jesus not know you if you are preaching His word, doing good works in His name, and publishing His name out in public? Why would Jesus say He doesn't know you? I'm going to ask you, what was your appointed duty? So Jonah had an appointed duty to go warn Nineveh, didn't he? If Jonah had not turned back and gone to Nineveh, at judgment, where do you think Jonah would stand? You weren't one of mine. You weren't obedient. You didn't go. But through the mercy of God, God prepared a great fish, helped change Jonah's mind, to put him back on the right track, to get him to where he needed to be. Do you know there's a duty that's part of being a Christian? It's not just about confessing God and doing what we think God wants. Go back to the Garden of Eden. There was a tree in the middle of that garden, wasn't there? You weren't supposed to eat of it. Why did Adam and Eve eat of that tree? Because they started thinking, well, I know God said this, but He must not have meant it that way, maybe. It's a good tree. It'll make you wise. Why wouldn't we eat of this tree? Let's also look now in Luke chapter 6, verses 46 through 49. Jesus speaking again. And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whoso cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon the rock and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that went with that without a foundation, built an house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. What was the difference between these two people? They both built a house. For all we know, they use the same house plans. Maybe they bought them from some company and went and built a house, but one house stood the storm and one didn't. Remember talking about earlier when I said that there's four parts of an appointment? Oftentimes you have the agreement, you have the position or place, you have the responsibility, and then you have the equipment or needs to take care of that responsibility. To me, this is a kind of looking at people and whether or not they're in the right place. So the Lord, in this example, and I'm going to take a little liberty here with the parable, two men looking to build a house. Goes to the Lord, where do you want me to build the house? Lord says, I want you to build a house here, right here on this little piece of rocky ground. So the two men go down there, and one man, he gets to work. I don't know about y'all, down here in Louisiana, y'all don't have that many rocks, but when we lived in Missouri, we had rocks, and they could be big rocks. And sometimes you're trying to put a fence post in. I remember, Dad, you'd get down maybe 2 foot, and you'd run into a big old rock. And you only have a couple of choices. You either try to chip and chip and bust until you can get enough depth to set the post in, or you have to move your post. And I remember one big old rock. He must have moved that post about 6 feet, still is on that rock. Wasn't anything he could do. He just had to go to work on that rock and try to knock it down to where he could get enough depth to set that post. You try to build a foundation on rock, you're going to have a good foundation, but you know you're going to have a lot more work. It's not going to be easy. You're going to have parts of the rock sticking up. You're going to need to get those knocked down more level. There may be parts of the rock that you have to put holes in. So one man built his house there, and he put his foundation down, got it on that rock, and it was good. The other man, he's out there, he looks at that rocky old ground, and he says, you know what? This is up a little higher, you can see better, but you know, right down there, it's a little closer to the river, but that looks like some pretty good ground. Let me go down there. Oh yeah, there's not very many rocks down here. I can smooth me a spot out real good, pack it down. It'd just be a lot easier to build a house here. And so he does. How far away is it from the spot that the Lord asked him to build? Maybe not that far. It may not look like the man is really that out of line. But then the rains come. The floods come. And the stream does what? In one, it said it came up and it beat against the house on the rock. And it stood. Now this other house, like I said, this is me with a little liberty, built down lower on better ground that was softer, easier to work. That stream's now out of his bank. What happens to that house? Have y'all ever watched videos of houses sometimes when they're on a cliffside and the cliff is being undercut by the ocean and things? There's no rock in that dirt. And eventually what happens to that house up on that cliff? You see it start tilting. Or sometimes just a section of it will fall off. And you'll see the back of the house just open. And if you watch long enough, eventually the whole house just falls. It's gone. All because I just wanted to take the easy way out. I wasn't out of place, was I? Depends. If you ask the Lord, where's the proper place for me to build? Where's the best, safest place for me to build? And he said, right there. And you didn't build there, then you were out of place. The agreements, you know, when we think about agreements, they're exacting. I don't know if any of y'all have ever had to negotiate agreements as part of a business. I'm in the process of negotiating some right now. I've been working on the negotiations for 7 months. Because our legal team and I will sit down and we'll go through the document and they'll tell me exactly what the different parts mean, and we'll have a discussion on what that fits, what we're looking for, if we feel like that's not in our interest. And then we'll make tweaks and we send it back to their legal team, and then their legal team, and they sit down and they do that. We've been going back and forth for 7 months. Why? Because when we execute that agreement and we actually start doing, they start doing the work I'm wanting them to do, I want it done a certain way. I want it done that way. So that agreement's going to have in it what I need. Do you realize the Bible's like that? It's not a negotiation. God has said, this is life. This is how it's to be lived. And if you want it lived well, this is it. It's going to take some work. It's going to be hard. But it's doable. You know, sometimes we may think we're doing all right. You know, I feel like I've built a house in a good spot where the Lord told me to. Everything's going fine. I'm doing good. But do you know we can still neglect our duty? Ahab, king of Israel, he had been attacked by Ben-Hadad, king of Syria. Now, they had the fight in the hills, and the Lord had told Ahab, you're going to win. I'm not going to let Syria defeat you. And so they defeated Syria. Syria left, and the prophet came down and told Ahab, now in a year, he's coming back. You need to be prepared. So Ben-Hadad and his people, when they got back, they were thinking about it, and finally they came up with the logic that, we know what the problem was. Their God is the God of the hills. He's not the God of the valleys, though. So we need to go back and attack him in the valley, and we're going to win. And so a year later, they came back. And the prophet came back to Ahab and said, he's coming back. You know, you're going to win. So they had the battle. And Ben-Hadad was defeated, and he ran off into a little town. And in that little town, Ahab found him, sent people. They went to talk to him. Ben-Hadad sent some people out to see how it looked, if it was going to be bad for him or good for him. And in the ensuing conversation, it ended up to where Ahab took Ben-Hadad up into his chariot, made a truce with him. They agreed to swap some cities, and he sent Ben-Hadad home. Well, there was a prophet that went up to a man and said, I need you to strike me. I need you to wound me. And the man's like, I'm not wounding you. So he went and got another fellow. That fellow wounded him, and he went and stood by the road. And he told the king a story when the king drove by. He said, King, I need your help. The king's like, what? He goes, well, I'd been entrusted with a prisoner, and during the course of the battle, he got away from me. And part of the agreement was that it would be my life for his life if he escaped. And Ahab's like, well, you've spoken, judged yourself. You agreed to that. So what are you talking about? 1 Kings chapter 20, verse 42. And this is the prophet speaking. And he said unto him, thus saith the Lord, because thou hast let go out of thy hand a man who I appointed to utter destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people. Ahab had been told, this guy's coming back. Defeat him. He didn't do it. He had beat him in battle. But he let him go. 3 years later, there was another battle with Ben-Hadad, and Ahab was killed in that battle. Do you know God's appointments will be fulfilled one way or the other? Ben-Hadad eventually was smothered to death by one of his servants. He was sick, had reached out to the prophet to see if he would recover. The prophet told the servant, it was Hazael, he can recover, but you're going to kill him. And so that servant went back and told the king, yeah, you'll live. And then the next day smothered him with a thick piece of wet cloth. So Ben-Hadad did not escape the Lord's appointment for destruction. Do you think we can escape our appointment with God based on what we do? Because sometimes I think we look around life and we think, you know, this date time thing, it's a human construct a lot. God did point time so we could track it. But this idea sometimes that everything is tied to a specific date and time, have you ever noticed God oftentimes seems to work by circumstances? He doesn't really think of time like we think of it. 1,000 years is as one day is as 1,000 years. Now, if I thought about time like that, and Brother Shane, I hope you don't mind me picking on you a bit, and I owed Brother Shane $20, and I told Shane, well, sometime between tomorrow and 1,000 years from now, I'm going to get you that $20. What do you think Brother Shane's expectation of that $20 is going to start looking like after a while? He's going to be like, I'm just going to have to let that $20 go because I don't think I'm ever getting it. Why? Well, he keeps telling me he's going to get it to me tomorrow, but then when I talk to him, he says it'll be 1,000 years. He's inconsistent, speaking of me in this scenario. But is God really inconsistent? What is God looking for? He's looking to save souls. He's looking to reconcile people to Him. He's not watching the clock like we are. He's not sitting there saying, oh, yeah, Jesus came down, it's been X number of years, it's time to take the planet over and destroy it and put the new heaven and new earth out. He's not bound by that. What's He bound by? I want to save souls. Can I get one more? Can I save one more soul? I don't want any souls to perish. That's in the Bible attributed to God. So if He doesn't want any souls to perish, do you think He's really as concerned about the timing as we are? Or is He more concerned about the circumstances? Where is that person at in their life? The appointment I've been trying to make with them to potentially bring them to the altar or meet them at their place of prayer at their house. Are they consistently pushing that appointment off? Or are they willing to say, you know what, Lord? I want to try. I want that appointment. Let me go there. Do you know that one thing that I love about God, and we talked about it before, is that mercy. I can tell you that even since I've been preaching, there's been times the Lord's come up to me and said, you know what, we had an agreement, and you're not where you're supposed to be. You need to move to where I need you. You need to straighten up on something. You need to get back to where you're supposed to be. Do you know God is gracious to do that? To me, that is one of the biggest hallmarks of His loving kindness to us, is that, guess what? He knows we're going to struggle. He knows we'll get distracted potentially and get off course. But He doesn't want us to go to hell. And He's willing to say, if you will, just go read the agreement again. I'll even help you understand the difficult parts. I can give you understanding. Now, are you ready to get back where we need to be? Are you ready to put your life back on track? Isn't it wonderful that God is willing to meet with us? Have any of y'all ever had an appointment with somebody and then something come up just unexpectedly and you have to call them up? Hey, I apologize. I've got to cancel our meeting. At work, I work in an operations center. Our job is monitoring the equipment, buildings, communications, computers for the entire company across the state. Some days, things just go wrong. And there's been days where I've just, because of all the other things going wrong, I'm just canceling meeting after meeting after meeting. Hey, I have to, I'm sorry, things are just really messed up for me right now, and I just have to reschedule. But you know what? If I call a person and say, I'm not going to be able to meet that appointment because I'm struggling right now. I've got too many things going on. I just can't seem to do it. Most times, don't those people say, okay, well, let's see when we can work it back into the schedule. There's rare times where maybe an appointment can't be rescheduled. But most of the time, you can negotiate that. In our lives, you know, when you're living for God, there's going to be times in your life where you're going to wake up and life is just going to run you over. And you're going to be like, I just can't do anything right. Do you know what? Reach out to the Lord. Father, I know where I'm supposed to be. But Father, I'm not there. This and this is going on. It's got me out of kilter. I need help. I need to know where to go. I need to know how to deal with this right now. Do you know God will work with you where you're at? One thing I want us to consider, Isaiah 58, verses 1 through 3, says, cry aloud, spare not. Lift up thy voice like a trumpet and shew my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways. As a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinance of justice. They take delight in approaching to God. Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast ye find pleasure, and exact all your labors. Now this is actually a warning to saved people. Have you ever thought of it that way? This is the warning to the children of Israel. This is the warning to those of us that say we're living right. And what were these people doing? They seek me daily. Sounds pretty good. Do you go to the Lord in prayer every day? So what's wrong? And delight to know my ways. So do you enjoy reading and learning about the Lord? As a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They really liked seeking after the knowledge and ordinances of the Lord. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to God. Now, does any of this yet sound like a people that's out of line? A people that's not meeting their responsibility for the Lord? But what I find interesting is that last verse. Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of their fast ye find pleasure and exact all your labors. Do you realize what's being described here as a people? That while they still followed the law, they worshiped daily, they dug into the scriptures, and they sought to draw close to God, it had become all about them. It wasn't about God anymore. They forgot that the covenant is to get people to God. We live to worship and serve God. That's the only reason why the planet exists. But here they are saying, wherefore have we fasted? And God, you're not seeing it. God, you're not upholding your end of the bargain. You know, we've afflicted our souls and you're not taking knowledge, God. Do you know you can be the most punctually religious person in the world and lose sight of what's going on? Totally not be in the appointed place and time you need to be because it becomes all about you. It becomes, my side of the agreement said, Lord, you were going to do X, X, and X, and Y for me. And I don't see you doing that, Lord. And you need to tighten up, God. Have we ever maybe found ourselves a bit in that spot when it comes to facing the Lord? We need to be careful. The Pharisees in Jesus' time, didn't they do the same? They herb gardens. It said they tracked how much herbs they grew, and they actually gave tithes out of their herb gardens. How many of y'all wives out there that may have an herb garden actually keep track of the increase of your herb garden so you can make sure that God gets his 10% that you're going to give it away? When you start thinking about that, that's pretty exacting. And yet Jesus said, they don't do what I want them to do. They neglect the weightier matters. They're all into my tithes, what I need to give to the Lord, and they're neglecting what I, the Lord, want, which is people to come to me. Do you know that if it becomes about us, we can get justified in the way we see things? We can read the word and feel like that this contract says the Lord's going to do X, Y, Z, or says this, and because of that, it's that way. We can get militant. You know, does God get militant with us breaking his rules? Does he get militant with us breaking his rules? Does he stomp his foot? No. What happens? He tries to work with us. He says, you know what? I'm willing to work with you. Come, let's reason together. Why? So your sins, your mistakes, your errors, though they're scarlet, I can make them white as snow. Just work with me. Just work with me. Just simply work with me. It's in the agreement. It may seem lopsided sometimes when you get into agreements and you read them. I've had some contracts come past my desk and I look at them and think, wow, I'm not signing this. And then I pass it to the legal department and sometimes they come back and, oh yeah, we didn't have any changes. That's a good document. Well, what do you mean? Oh, well, this protects you here. And I know it sounds funny, but this actually protects you here. And oh, wow, this actually was a document that pretty much was written in my favor for a change. But I didn't understand it until the Lord talks to our soul and says, you know, what seems so harsh to you seems maybe so out of line. Take the time to go get the Holy Spirit. Let's talk about it. Do you know, if we have the Holy Spirit teaching and guiding us, we can be in the appointed place and time that the Lord wants us to be. But we have to be careful. In Proverbs 14 and 12, it talks about, there is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. One of the things that's often been a challenge to me and a concern to me, especially when it comes to getting up to preach, lean not to your own understanding. There's a way that seems right to me personally. But if I follow it, you know, I could lead people astray. I could end up myself lost forever. The only chance I have of not doing that is, Lord, I need you to explain to me what's going on. You know, all men are born into sin. And if we rely on our instincts, which direction do you think we're going to go? If our natural inclination is to sin, and so we decide that on our own, using just our own logic, we're going to think it through and we're going to determine what's right, do you think we're going to make a good choice? Or do you think we're going to end up down the wrong path? And something else I want us to consider, because this is something in our world today, it's a big deal, especially today with a lot of the folks that's unemployed. Do you know the Lord can equip your life with anything you need, and he knows your needs before you ask? Luke 22:35. This is Jesus speaking to his disciples. Now, this is at the other end of his ministry. So he sent them out early on. And now he's asking them in Luke chapter 22, verse 35. And he said unto them, when I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? And they said, nothing. So here Jesus just point blank asked them, I gave you an appointment to go preach in a bunch of places. And as part of that, I told you the provisions will be there when you need them. And now he's asking them, how'd that turn out? Did you get anywhere and find the provisions weren't there? Did you ever come up short? And what was their response? No, we always had what we needed. Do you know sometimes the things that can get us off base with the Lord is we can get to worrying too much about the stuff he's in charge of? And we need just to back off and let the Lord handle it. We can get distracted with things. Acts 22 and 10. This is Apostle Paul, and this is the challenge I would have for all of us. And I said, what shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said unto me, arise and go unto Damascus, and there it shall be told thee of all things which are appointed for thee to do. Are you up to the challenge of accepting the agreement in the Bible? Are you willing to go sit down with the Lord and say, what is it that you've appointed for me in my life to do? Are you willing to wait on him for the tools and supplies to do that? I would ask us, take a good hard look at yourself. Consider carefully, what is your spiritual appointment made up of in your life today? When you go before God, is it about, Lord, I'm trying to be in the place you want me to be? I'm trying to do what you want me to do. I'm trying to follow the covenant of your word. And I'm looking to you for the help, both knowledge, tools, spiritual help, physical help to do it. Or is it more like the folks who read there in Isaiah, Lord, you're not doing your part. Lord, I'm having to step up and take over for you in this aspect. Lord, you let me down over there because you didn't do it quite the way I wanted it done. You know, part of that appointment, if I want the tires changed, sometimes I don't have a whole lot of choices if the tire shop is busy. I might want to have my appointment at 8:30. Tire shop's as close as appointment is at noon. Can't do you at 8:30. Sometimes you have to say, okay, well, I need the tires changed. So noon it is. What appointment do you have with the Lord? What is he trying to work with you on? And how well are you meeting your side of that bargain? Y'all pray for me.